This is a previously recorded episode. This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. This is a previously recorded episode. This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. M Squared TechCast is an affiliate of the Podcast Detroit Network. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
We're not really sure right now, but we will definitely be on SoundCloud as a podcast, right?
It's not just a show, it's an adventure.
That's right.
It's always something every week.
It has been something different every week so far. That keeps us on our toes, I guess. Howdy, Mike. How you doing?
Fine. I'm Mike Brennan from MITechNews.com with my co-host.
I am Matt Rausch of the Engineering Society of Detroit, and I hope everybody's enjoying their Monday afternoon and enjoying their time, whenever they may be listening to this program.
You got
to
love this weather for October, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 74 degrees and sunny. Digging it.
Yeah. Hey, I want to introduce a couple of folks we have in the studio with us from ITC, the transmission company. As a disclaimer, they're also an advertiser of mine. I got to get that in there so everyone knows. We have Ron Hinsley, who's ITC's chief information officer. That's the guy that keeps all the technology humming, right, Ron?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, and then the guy that protects us from the bad guys is Joe Randazzo. Did I get that right?
You did.
Okay, cool. And they'll be on later on. Well, of course, we told them they're free to weigh in whenever they want as we move through this interesting show, right? Okay, speaking of which, what do you got for headlines, Matt?
Well, story number one for me this week was the buyout of a very successful software company in Troy called New World Systems Corporation for a whopping $670 million in
That's
cash and stock.
Some money there, huh?
Oh, yeah. It would be good to be a shareholder there. They got bought out by a company from Plano, Texas called Tyler Technologies Incorporated. Oh. They trade on the New York Stock Exchange under the ticker symbol TYL. New World was founded in 1981 by a guy named Larry Lineweber. The company has more than 2,000 public sector customers and more than 470 employees.
Wow.
Its products include Aegis, that's A-E-G-I-S, that's a public safety software suite for 911 dispatch centers, police officers, firefighters, paramedics, you know, basically all first responders. They also have a product called Logos, that's L-O-G-O-S, that's public administration software that meets the accounting needs of city and county governments. Now, the company that's doing the buying, Tyler Technologies, says that there are, quote, no plans to materially impact either company's workforce. And New World Systems headquarters in Michigan is expected to continue to operate virtually unchanged.
You figure the boss has bought that Ferrari yet?
I don't know. So it sounds like maybe the boss's secretary is the only one that's that's retiring early here. Hopefully, anyway. I mean, sometimes these buyouts cause a lot of layoffs and a lot of moving people around and
redundancies, right?
Yeah, well, that's synergy, right? That's why you do them. But hopefully, this one. You know, the company's real assets are the people walking in and out the door every day and developing the software. So hopefully those people will continue to maintain their jobs. They'll just be doing so for a bigger company. This fills a hole in Tyler Technologies' software lineup in that they do government software too, but they didn't really do anything for police and fire. Hmm. So that was their big deal for, big reason for buying the company.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It's been a very successful company. I've toured it a couple of times. They do all of the right things in terms of software development, and they recruit and hire a lot of people here locally. So, it's been an interesting company to watch grow. That said, the fate of these companies usually is either a public stock offering, in which case you're working for Wall Street, or a buyout by a bigger company that's also publicly traded, in which case you're working for Wall Street. So, you know, that's generally what happens with these deals.
That's capitalism at work
at
for
its
you, right?
Finest, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, and hopefully the people who got that $670 million will now feel free to invest in other, you know, neat little companies around Detroit. That's what you hope anyway, that you're creating a couple of investors and venture capitalists.
Perhaps even an M Squared TechCast. We'll have to talk to the new that very rich new boss, right?
So absolutely.
Okay, good. Hey, I wanted to announce that just today, Pure Michigan announced. We got lots of announcing here. A photo contest that celebrates the four seasons. Well, what is that all about? So if you got some really good snapshots of Michigan in winter, summer, fall, you know, and all that spring, if you submit them by October 15th to Pure Michigan, you can be featured next year in the 2016 Tourist Guide. So that's high publicity, right?
Very nice. Yep.
Plus, I think they also throw in some parting prizes from the whatever the Pure Michigan gift shop is. I haven't really checked that out to see what you get from that.
No, but if you talk to my wife, I have taken approximately 9 million pictures of the sun. Set off the pier in Frankfurt, so maybe I should enter one of those.
Different seasons, I hope. Right?
Well,
maybe
yeah,
you can sweep it and get all four, right?
So. We'll see. Yeah, I don't know why. I have a thing for sunset pictures on Lake Michigan. I always take a million of them. Some pretty interesting news from the biotech field. Esperion Therapeutics is a company in Ann Arbor. This is the team that was behind Lipitor, actually, that invented that drug. They're now outlining their plans for final phase 3 clinical trials of their new drug, ETC-1002. They've been cleared to do that by the Food and Drug Administration. This new drug from Esperion, ETC-1002, is basically for people who can't take statin drugs. Statin drugs in some people do have pretty severe side effects, including really bad muscle pain and weakness.
Not I had a buddy of mine that had that happen to him, and they couldn't figure out what was going on for a long time. He was 50 years old, and he had the body of about a 90-year-old, and then they figured that's what it was.
Yeah, well, they say that about 10% of the people who start statin drugs have to drop them because of those side effects, and that's like 3-4 million people in the country, so that's a built-in market for this new drug. And so they're going to, you know, basically plan final clinical trials of this thing. When it'll hit the market is anybody's guess. It could be 3 years, it could be 5 years, but it is another option for people who want to take a pill to lower their cholesterol who can't take Lipitor and other statin drugs.
Yeah, cool. Hey, now this isn't technology, just a personal pet peeve of mine since I drive so much. There's actually some action now about the road funding package. We picked this up from our partner, Guinewer News Service, that the speaker now is looking at coming up with $800 million in new revenue for the roads, which is not even, you know, it's dropping the bucket for what we need. But hey, it's a start. We got to get something going.
I was
going
to say, it's one-third of what we need, which is more than we have now. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So keep our fingers crossed that our legislature can move from whatever it is they're doing, actually not doing, into actually fixing the roads. Now, again, I don't usually let you know my particular politics or feelings.
Well, no matter what you say, you're going to piss half the audience off. So
I know that, yes,
okay,
and that's part of our job, right?
So where, pray tell, do they say, or do they say, where this new revenue will be coming from? Who's about to be squeezed a little harder here?
Well, they're going to take it out of general funds. They're going to make some cuts in various areas. You know, they weren't real specific because it was Guinewer was leaking this, that they hadn't got it all worked out. But at least this – and the governor, of course, is very frustrated. I know he wants to fix the roads. But unfortunately, the legislature getting any money out of them has been problematic.
Yeah, I just hope that they're not going to cut college higher education further out of this, because that's the one thing.
Yeah, they always whack that.
Yeah, you talk to the university presidents and they used to get 60-70% of their funding from the state, and now in some cases it's literally down to the single digits.
I think U of M, my alma mater, gets about 4%.
Yeah, it's only like 8 or 9 at my favorite up north school, Michigan Tech. So. You know, I mean, it's hardly anything anymore.
Yeah.
So
what else you got?
I went last week to the Mich Auto Summit, which is a joint deal by the Detroit Chamber and the Michigan Economic Development Corporation on the future of the auto industry in Michigan. And it was all about tech. It was a really interesting meeting. They talked about production components built by 3D printers, increasing autonomy of cars that help the driver stay out of accidents. It's not quite to the point where you could, you know, fall asleep in the back seat, but it's getting closer. Advanced powertrains involving electricity and hydrogen. You know, speakers talked about cars more in terms of being part of an overall system of mobility rather than simply owning
a
car.
I like that, overall system of mobility.
Oh, yeah. Well, this guy from the director of Smart Connected Vehicles, and what a job title that is, didn't exist a few years ago, at Cisco Systems, believe it or not.
Whoa.
So they've got a director of Smart Connected Vehicles. He said, we're moving from building cars to selling personal travel time well spent. So that's that's the high concept here, you know, for cars.
Concept, yeah.
My spoke of, you know, closing the technology gap to autonomous vehicles, sort of moving from an era in which people owned cars to a future in which they will share access. And as I have heard recently, they keep using the music model as a part of this. We've gone from an era where people wanted to own records and they wanted to own CDs to where they were moving toward, you know, just having access to music. And having the very, you know, very particular thing that they want. Like if they want to commute, they're going to get a small car that's fun to drive. If they want to tow something, they're going to get a truck. They don't want to have to own a truck all the time if they only want to tow something once in a while.
It's kind of almost like the Zipcar model, right, or something.
Yes. Huh? And all of the automakers are planning for this. Here's another fancy buzzword, multimodal mobility system. That's also going to involve public transportation and other forms of transportation like airlines and Amtrak.
Hmm.
There was also a lot of talk about additive manufacturing, better known as 3D printing. A 3D printer manufacturer by the name of Stratasys was there and had a bunch of auto parts to show off where they can not just use plastic in these 3D printers. Now they can use metals as well.
Really?
So I'm still waiting for the Star Trek replicator, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Make me a chicken sandwich just right now.
Twang.
Yeah. not there yet. Not there yet.
Okay. All right. Hey, I want to – Next Energy announced last week that their big lighting conference is coming up, speaking of technology. And that's going to be October 29th in Lansing at the Radisson there. And they're going to focus on LED light emitting diode, right? Is it how we get
yes.
Yep. So many acronyms in this business. Technology which provides building owners the benefits of significant energy and operational savings. Obviously, I'm reading from the script here. What does all that mean? I mean, we're getting more efficient lighting that uses a lot less energy, and that seems to be appropriate since we have our ITC guys here that transmit all that energy over their lines from various points to our distribution nodes, which are DTE and consumers. Did I get all that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Go ahead and weigh in any time there. So.
Okay. Well, speaking of lighting, I picked up an announcement here that a company out of Troy called Toggled. That does LED lighting, and they're a unit of the very interesting tech company Altair Engineering.
Oh, yeah.
They have another licensee for their patenting technology. I didn't know they had this many, but this company out of suburban Atlanta, Norcross, Georgia, called Halco Lighting Technologies, has licensed the patent portfolio of Toggled, which includes more than 60 patents, and they're primarily related to LED replacements for fluorescent tube lighting, commonly referred to as TLEDs, tube light-emitting diodes.
Ooh.
So instead of the tubes that we have here over our heads in the fluorescent fixtures, those will be LED fixtures instead. And all of this stuff is being developed. Now, the manufacturing of the LED, you know, cells themselves is in China. But the assembly of this thing into a sellable product from raw material is taking place in Troy. And, you know, I find that really interesting and encouraging.
All right, great. 2 minutes, I'm getting the indication here. I think we just had Meredith Brunt call in. So she calls again, and we'll bring her right in, and she can chime in on this. Speaking of Altair, they've been on an acquisitions and partnership tear lately. And one of the big partnerships they just did was Airbus, which is the European equivalent of Boeing. And they're going to be using the HyperSuite computer-aided engineering software suite that Altair uses. And that's a big win when you got Airbus.
Oh yeah, that's the number two airplane manufacturer in the world.
Depends on the year. Right? Yeah. Sometimes it's Boeing, sometimes it's Airbus.
Yeah, but it seems like a lot of the stuff that you write on Delta out of Detroit is indeed the Airbus product.
Yeah.
They also just introduced a brand new family of wide body jets to sort of compete with the 747. Not quite as big, but way more efficient supposedly.
Yeah. Well. In the end, we'll see, you know. But anyway, so we're going to actually go to break, and when we come back, Meredith Bronk is going to be calling in. She's the new CEO of OST.
Yeah.
Here we go, acronyms again, in Grand Rapids. But actually, it's a very large company, almost $200 million a year in revenue, along with Linda Deschant, who's the executive director of the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan. And these are two very high-placed female executives in technology in Michigan.
All right, we'll see you in a minute.
This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome back to the M Squared TechCast.
I'm Mike Brennan.
And I'm Matt Rausch, and we're back for segment number two.
And we have with us calling in from Grand Rapids, Meredith Bronk, who is the CEO of OST, which it's Open System Technologies, right? Oh, are you there? Meredith?
Meredith, are you still with us?
Meredith? I think we lost Meredith here.
Yeah, the call just dropped.
Okay. Well, okay. Let's go to Linda. Linda's there. You there, Linda?
I am here.
Okay. Like I say, it's not just a show, it's an adventure. All right, so we have Linda Deshon, who's the executive director of the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan. Is Meredith back now with us?
Yes.
Are you there, Meredith?
Yes, this is Meredith.
Okay, good. All right, so let's start with you real quick. You're the CEO of Open Systems Technologies. That's what OST stands for, right?
That's correct.
Okay, cool. Now, folks on this side of the state may or may not have heard of you guys, but I know you're a major league player. Your revenue is somewhere in the ballpark of $180 million a year. And more importantly, I guess, for this segment, is you just got named CEO a couple months ago, right?
I did. I was officially took over as president and CEO in April 1st.
Long ago. I didn't realize it was that long ago. So
Meredith, tell us a little bit about, I guess, the history of the company, when it was founded, how many employees you have now, that kind of thing, how the company grew.
Sure. We were formed, actually, in 1997, and I've been with the company since 1998, so I've been around for a long time, almost 18 years. Started out, actually, in the infrastructure business and selling servers and storage to enterprise servers, enterprise clients, kind of pre-Y2K, and grew up out of the infrastructure space, went into app dev in 2008, and have, in 2002, seven of us actually bought out the company and kind of started off on our own.
Okay, and what's the employee count at these days?
Today, we have about 180.
Okay.
Oh, that's big.
Full-time employees.
And I know you have an office down in southeast Michigan somewhere. I'm not sure which city you're in.
We do. It's right in downtown Detroit.
Oh, okay. And then where are your other offices at?
We're headquartered in Grand Rapids, and we have the office in Detroit. And then we also have an office in Minneapolis, an office in the UK, and an office that we just opened in Chicago earlier this year.
What would you say your sweet spot is? Of all the things you do, what do you do the best?
You know, it sounds a little cliche. We solve really tough problems for our enterprise clients. I was telling some folks here the other day, it's going that extra and knowing that extra 10%, really. And it could be in the data center infrastructure and architecture where we started, but the custom app dev, particularly in mobility and cross-platform application development, I would say are probably a couple of our sweet spots right now.
Well, that seems like a good segue to bring in Linda Deshon. I did pronounce it right, Linda, right?
You did.
I've been practicing all morning. So she's the executive director of the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan. I don't know if you two ladies know each other, but that's what Linda's group does, is really focuses on wireless and mobility. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Linda?
I'd be happy to. We are a nonprofit trade association for the mobile and wireless technologies industry, as well as the businesses that provide those technologies and the businesses in all industries that use them. So pretty much since everybody is really beginning to use wireless technologies in some way, we're pretty much a trade association that encompasses all different types of industries. And our goals are really about promoting what is happening here in Michigan, helping to diversify Michigan's economy through the use of these technologies.
Great.
All right, so you folks used to do regular meetups. It was like Mobile Mondays, right? Are you still doing that, or what kind of events and programs are you doing now?
We have Mobile Monday chapters, and I apologize. I'm having a noise coming from somewhere. I so apologize.
Oh, no worries.
We have Mobile Monday chapters in Grand Rapids and Lansing and Detroit and Ann Arbor.
I think you're just bringing the Grand Rapids chapter back online, if I recall, right?
Yeah, that is correct. We've had it going for a number of years, and then we had some transition. We have volunteer leaders for each chapter, and we had a lot of people move out of town and that sort of thing, so we had to find some new people to take over. We've done that. We've gotten a new sponsor on board with Priority Health, and we're going to be kicking off in Grand Rapids again on the 19th of October, I believe.
And these sessions are basically networking events for mobile development professionals, right?
Well, networking and education, but not just for developers. It's really for every part of the mobile and wireless ecosystem. So developers are certainly a part of it, but it's really, you'll find at our events, there's going to be CEOs of companies like healthcare companies and management firms and advertising agencies, because everybody needs to learn how to accommodate these technologies within their business these days.
I want to weigh in and sort of, I know you're both involved in mobile and wireless and other things, of course, for OST, but one of the things I wanted to ask about is there's not a lot of women right now that are in top management positions in technology around the state. You two both are. Why do you think that is? Why is it that women haven't advanced as far as you in general versus the men?
Meredith, do you want to start, or I'm happy to take it?
You can go first. Go ahead, Linda.
Yeah, okay. No, go ahead. Well, it's something that we're very much trying to address. We actually have a Women in Mobile and Wireless Technology Advisory Council that is statewide. And as a matter of fact, they're going to be putting on an event in just a couple of weeks, on October 22nd, that is geared toward helping women understand the different kinds of careers available to them because of these technologies and the fact that it crosses so many different industries. So it's something that we're very much trying to address, and hopefully put Michigan out in the forefront there of having the most women working in these fields.
Meredith, what do you have to say about that?
You know, I'm with Linda. I think continuing to encourage women to get into the field is part of our both challenge and opportunity that we have. As a female leader in technology, I'll tell you that, not very many sit in the same seat that I'm sitting in, but as I've come up over the last 18 years in business, I work along a lot of female CIOs and other leaders in technology who are bringing about their thought leadership and their leadership in the industry in ways that I think is helping us all be better. So I've got some great role models out there that have forged a path. And I think as I look right now at our workforce and the developers that we have on staff and the consultants and the managers that we have, female leadership is definitely on the rise.
Well, and that's one of the things that we're noticing at the Engineering Society of Detroit also is women's enrollment in engineering schools, while still not 50-50, is up significantly from where it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and computer engineering is certainly a part of that. I know Michigan Tech is pretty excited that they're getting close to 30% women enrollment. A million years ago when I was in high school, it was at 10%.
Well, MSU's engineering school is, pushing 50% women, I think, now.
Well, and a lot of that has to do with the biomedical engineering that a lot of these schools are adding. Now, women whose healthcare career choices used to be limited to nursing now can do anything they want in healthcare, and some of them are combining that with an engineering education. But still, the hardcore coding, that seems to still be kind of a male purview. Is there anything specifically you're doing to address that?
Well, it's one of those areas where, I sit on the Michigan STEM Partnership Board as well, and one of the things that we're battling there is the fact that girls, when they're young and in school, are somehow led to believe that this is something they wouldn't be good at, and so they tend to shy away from it. And so one of the things that particular organization is working on, and I know groups like the Michigan Council for Women in Technology are also working on, is trying to help younger girls understand how they are capable of doing this and what a great opportunity it is for them, and really developing events and programs to help them get exposure to it. And I think that's the kind of thing that's really necessary, because young girls are at this point still conditioned to think that it's something they wouldn't be good at. And if we can show them otherwise, then we have a much easier time of getting them into these kinds of careers.
Yeah, and I was lucky enough to get a media freeloader ticket to the Michigan Council of Women in Technology's signature gala.
Oh, yeah, that was last weekend.
Yeah, Saturday night. And three of the speakers that they had at this gala, while everyone was, you know, tucking into their surf and turf, was the was three young girls. There was a seventh grader and two fifth graders that are both like expert coders, and we're talking about, you know, moving to HTML6 and Java, and it was just phenomenal. These, you know, fifth grade girls, that are into this stuff, and you know, nobody's going to tell them that they can't do anything.
And I'll tell you, I think the narrative is changing. You know, we have there's an organization out there called Girls Who Code, and we are very closely involved with the chapter here that's in West Michigan, and that targets middle school and young high school girls. There's also another thing that we do here called Bit Camp. So there are some programs that are helping to change the narrative, and every time you get a girl exposed, the impact that can have is exponential, because then they are changing the narrative. So I'm excited actually to see some of the increased involvement at the younger levels. I think too, as technology becomes more consumed by younger people, which I've got three daughters myself, who are 11, 13, and 15 years old, as they use and consume technology, the idea that they could create it is plausible to them, and within their reach. So I think part of that is just changing the exposure and changing the narrative.
I wanted to leap in here and mention that we have with us Ron Hensley. I got that right this time, right? Hensley. Okay.
Hensley. Yes.
Keep mispronouncing it. Sorry. He's the ITC Chief Information Officer. So at ITC, what's the situation with women in technology?
Well, there are a number of women engineers and IT professionals at the company. We have a young women engineering group that's very active inside the organization, and IT highly encourages women to get involved in the company and in that field.
Great. All right. And do you have any kind of active recruitment from the colleges in that area?
Yes, we do. Our human resource department attends job fairs and has held job fairs and has done things like that to entice folks to come to ITC.
All right. We got about a minute left here. Is there anything we can do that we're not doing in the state then to bring more women into technology? Either of you want to weigh in on that?
I think it's just continuing to add more exposure, provide more opportunities through events and programs.
Yeah, there's you know, a lot of programs. The MCWT is working with the Girl Scouts now on a program. I think it's called Go Get It, with, you know, it being IT. I know at the Engineering Society of Detroit, we've got a program for middle school kids called Future City that a lot of girls are involved in, and a high school program called Engineering Smart Michigan, and every organization you can think of. I mean, there's a lot of outreach going on here. Is there any place that's like a central clearinghouse for that either of you knows of?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay,
Meredith,
well,
how about you?
Well, there's
not that I'm aware of either.
Yeah, there's an opportunity for somebody.
Okay, we're going to have to cut this great discussion off, but we hope to get you both back on the show again real soon. We've been talking to Meredith Bronk, the CEO of OST, based in Grand Rapids, and Linda Deschant, who's the Executive Director of the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan. I think you're based in Detroit, right, Linda?
Correct.
Okay, cool. This is M Squared Tech Guy. This is Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch, and we'll be right back.
This is a previously recorded episode.
This is Mike Brennan on the third segment of M Squared TechCast.
The third segment of the fourth episode.
Oh,
I can't do that math in my head, but there have been a few segments now.
Yes, and we're sort of getting better. I'm not sure how much. It's a work in progress constantly, and we always have some technical difficulty we have to battle through. And today, apparently, the podcastdetroit.com website is down, so you can't listen to us live that way, only on the app, I am told.
Yes, and you should have that app, by the way.
Absolutely.
So everyone
should have that app. The whole world should have that app,
absolutely,
right?
And it's at the App Store, so go get
yes,
there now.
Yes, well, there's like 24 shows now, Jessica? Jessica? I know it's some fantastic number, right?
Yeah, they're definitely building up quickly, and they just keep going.
Those guys, Bob and Dave, are real dynamos. Speaking of dynamos, we have with us Jan Ness, a longtime friend of mine. That's my disclaimer. But he's also a great technologist. Gosh, Jan, I've known you for 15 years, maybe?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, yeah. How long has the internet been on the internet?
It's 15 been a years.
20 years now, I guess. Yeah, right.
Well, Rihanna's now the only CEO of Online Tech. We had a story in, was it this week or last week? They all blend together. Your co-CEO, Mike Klein, has left the company. Now you're running with the ball by yourself. And what's all that mean for the company?
Oh, so, Mike Klein was co-CEO. He was here for 7 years with me. Great partner, just brought a ton of really neat stuff to the company. Some of the goal-setting processes and frameworks we have, he's responsible for. I mean, we wouldn't be where we are without him. Great guy to work with. I miss him. But, you know, seven or eight years at something, and people have all kinds of things they want to do in life, and he's out chasing some of those. He's still an owner in the company, and a sizable owner, and still very, very vested in seeing us succeed. Still a friend of the company, so we wish him well, and he wishes us well. You know, it's time for just one CEO, I guess, and so here we are.
Talk a little bit about what Online Tech does now. Of course, I'm obviously very familiar with it. Probably a lot of folks are, but there's probably a lot who aren't. And so let's get into that a little bit.
Sure. So Online Tech is a data center and cloud hosting provider here in the Midwest. Our roots are really born from right here in the heart of Michigan, Ann Arbor, where the internet was really kind of invented and discovered 25, 30 years ago here. And some of our original founders, in fact, this company was founded on April 1st of 1994.
Whoa.
Which is, I think it's before Netscape released their browser. So,
and was not Gary Baker involved in this company in its early years?
Yeah.
Gary Baker was the founder and the CEO of the company, and he's still a good friend of ours, obviously.
Yeah, I just talked to him about that on Internet Advisor the other day. He knew you were coming on the show, and so he said, yes, Jan has taken that quite far. So,
yeah, it's been a really good run. I mean, you know, some of it's due to the tide, right? Everybody is into cloud computing, and I call it the mass digitization of everything. Which, if there's anything we did right, is we called that properly in 2003. Because when we bought this company, by the way, the average data center in the United States was only 23% utilized, and people had just lost billions of dollars on the stock market investing in just, you know, the growth of the internet.
It
didn't happen
well,
as fast as everybody wanted.
Yes, unfortunately, I was involuntarily rebalanced myself. Right? Yeah.
A lot of 401ks became 101ks.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I fell, you know, prey to some of that too. But you know, it still happened, and nobody needs less of this stuff 1 year over the next. So we got in the business and bet on infrastructure, and the tide lifts us. So. We're really thankful for that, although we do believe we have something really unique here.
I wanted to mention we have in studio a couple of folks from ITC, the transmission company, and one of them is the ITC CEO, and I'm going to get it right this time, Ron, Hinesley.
Yes, and that's CIO.
CIO. What did I say, CTO? Gosh, I'm just...
No, you said CEO. You gave him a nice raise.
As far as I'm concerned, you're the best in the top, so forget your boss, you know? So, all right, CIO. God darn it, I'm just having all sorts of time for this. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about that. So what are you guys doing in that area? I mean, do you use data centers, obviously? Are they in-house or what?
Yes, we have two data centers, one in Ann Arbor and one here in Novi. We do use cloud computing for some things as well. In particular, we'll use our hosted data centers for our transmission management systems, those that we use to manage the grid. We can't really put those out on the cloud, but we can do other business systems out there, which we have done.
Okay. Now, one of the things that we're going to try to do each show this month is this is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And we're going to, when the fourth segment, we're going to just devote it to what ITC is doing in this area. But the two of you can maybe talk about it a little briefly. I mean, that's really concerning with the, I know you handle a lot of healthcare records, so that's HIPAA. And then there's the issues with the bad guys trying to get into the data centers for one reason or another to steal the intellectual property or all that jazz. So what are you guys doing to keep the bad guys out? Start with him and we'll go to you. Go ahead, Jan.
That's probably our the reason for our existence. Our average server gets attacked a few hundred times a day. I think we've got 6,000 or 8,000 some servers, about 800 mission critical applications across our customer base. So we see millions of attacks all the time, and we use just a ton of technology and a security operations center that watches all that. Our target customers are, you know, hospitals, insurance companies, banks, those guys where it's highly, highly regulated, and security and enterprise class security is the only way. It's not your typical cloud kind of environment. So that's where we focus. So the one thing that we struggle with though sometimes is getting the board or the CFO CEOs to understand the value of security. And we see a lot of our customers, especially the larger hospitals, insurance companies, banks, finance institutions, struggling with how much should they spend, right? Because it's a bit of an arms race. You don't want to underspend. You open yourself for a lot of issues, but you don't want to overspend either because you got limited resources. And so what is the right amount of spend? Is there a percentage of revenue or something that you could stick a fork in and say, yeah, okay, that's doing prudence? So we have some data to help customers with that. But the one thing that really astonishes me, and this is true of our company too, is if you look at the balance sheet of almost any single company, they know to the dollar their furniture, their cash, all these assets. They have them tracked down to the dollar. But you don't see on balance sheets usually anything attributed to the data. Hmm. And what's interesting is if you went to your typical data, a company, us included, And tomorrow we showed up and all our furniture was gone, we'd be okay. We could operate. People be standing around, but we could operate, and it would not really hurt us that badly. If I showed up tomorrow and all my data was gone, in our ERP billing data center information management systems that really keep all this stuff running, we'd be out of business in the matter of 12 hours. And yet that asset's nowhere on our balance sheet. So how do I know how much I should spend to protect it? And that's been the hard thing to try to get our arms around with our customers and prospects. We're getting some headway there.
Hey, I wanted to have Jan. We also have in the studio with us Joe Randazzo, and I'm not going to promote him to CEO, I promise. The ITC's Director of Networks and Information Security. So with your data centers, what sort of issues are you running into, Joe? I mean, with the bad guys trying to get in?
Well, similar to Jan, we definitely have numerous people knocking on our door. I think that's just the industry in general these days. We also deploy a cybersecurity operations center, next generation tools, and enhanced visibility. The difference is that what we have that we're protecting is critical infrastructure. So the grid, you know, supports our daily lifestyle. So it's a very important target, and we take it very seriously. In fact, our board, Ron, and everybody else at ITC realizes that grid reliability effectively is a cyber secure system. So we take it seriously. We have advanced monitoring techniques. We also operate in a very heavily regulated environment. So a lot of the new regulations from a lot of alphabet soup from NERC, FERC, and other agencies also guide our practices. But we even go above and beyond that on our cybersecurity resilience.
Yeah, I mean, if they bring down the power grid, what do you guys got, right? You know, so I mean, you're not transmitting anything over your lines, so that's a bad thing. How much time we got, Jessica? We got 4 minutes here. So, Jan, what are you seeing the most? What sort of attacks are you experiencing the most?
Low and slow DDoS attacks. What's happening is people are getting behind a network with low and slow attacks, infecting a server or a device. Actually, that's the harder problem, like a phone, inside of a network, and then launching the attack against the edge of that network from the inside, because everybody has some degree of DMZ where they assume everything over here is safe. And what's happening is those things somehow are becoming unsafe, and so the attacks are coming from behind those things. That's what we're seeing the most of. The second thing is we're seeing a lot of attacks that are sort of application layer attacks. Like, here's an interesting one. One e-commerce site will go to another e-commerce site and drain their inventory of ladders, for example, because they're having a sale on ladders in that geography.
Huh. Interesting. Well, here's a question that I always ask people is are you hiring right now for what kind of positions, and what kind of luck are you having recruiting?
Good question. So we're hiring across the board. I mean, we're on a really growth tear. So sales engineers, networks, cybersecurity guys, systems guys, storage guys, gals, either one. In fact, we just hired four. I heard your earlier podcast. We hired four females in our company in the last 30 days. So we're all into that. We're across the board. I think we have a marketing position open. If you go to our website, I don't think we've had less than four or five different job positions open at a time.
And you have five data centers now. Are you thinking about adding more?
Yeah. So our plan first was to dominate Michigan with the four data centers we have, and these are enterprise class data centers. So we took one over from General Motors, FIS, Thomson Reuters, Sprint, Nextel. These are 30,000 to 50,000 square foot data centers that are pretty really enterprise class robust data centers. We recently opened one in Indianapolis, and in fact, it was, you guys know MISO, the power distribution guys down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're okay. Nodding their heads. I think they do. So.
Okay. Well, we bought
can't
their
see
old
that,
data
right?
center. We bought their old data center down near the Colt Stadium, if you're familiar with that, and then put a bunch of money into making it a little more hardened. It wasn't quite where we needed it to be, and so we upgraded that. Now we're at five, and I would love to pick up another five or six and get into three or four more states in the Midwest.
You got about 30 seconds, man. It looks like you have a question here.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to ask I asked you how recruiting was going, how difficult it was to recruit for some of these high-tech positions. Are you having trouble, or is it fairly smooth?
No, it's hard. It's about 100 resumes per position. Takes about 90 days.
Hmm. Okay. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
We agree.
Yes. Well, we're gonna get more into ITC, and I'm gonna get all the names and titles in the fourth segment because practice makes perfect. But right now, we've got to go to break. We've just been talking to Jan Ness, who's the CEO of Online Tech, and of course the guys from ITC. But you're gonna hear a lot more of them shortly. This is Mike Brennan
and Matt Rausch, and we'll be right back with more of the M2 Tech.
This is a previously recorded episode.
It's Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch, and we're back.
On M Squared TechCast. Yeah, we're getting that banter down pretty good. I think that's very professional there.
Okay, so. Well, that was not bad.
That was good. Yeah. Now, I'm going to do this introduction one more time, and I'm going to get it right this time. I'm not going to promote anybody or anything. So it's Ron Hinesley. I know your mother's listening, so I don't want to have that phone call. And you're the chief information officer at ITC. And then we also have Joe Randazzo, who is the director of networks and information security. He makes sure the bad guys stay out, and Ron just makes sure all the technology works just fine. Now, I know what ITC is, but a lot of people probably don't. So why don't you tell us about it?
Okay, thanks. ITC is International Transmission Corporation. We're headquartered out of Novi, Michigan. We own the transmission lines that cover several areas. We have over 15,000, almost 16,000 miles of transmission line, Michigan, Iowa, Minnesota, Kansas, places like that. We manage that out of Novi with offices in all of those places. About 550 employees have been in existence since 2003.
Wow.
Now, you were originally a spin-out of DTE, correct? Detroit
right.
Edison?
Yes, okay. Yes. ITC started with the DTE transmission assets.
Okay, so you own the stuff between...
Yeah, let's get this defined here. You don't own the power. You transmit the power.
Right, and you own the big power lines like between substations,
yes,
correct?
That's correct. Okay. We, as Mike says, we don't own generation and we don't own distribution. We are essentially the conduit or the superhighway between those entities. So we connect cities and towns, munis, co-ops, large utilities, that kind of thing.
So, Ron Hinesley, now one thing I'm a little confused on then, do you also connect with the other grids in the regions and bring in power from them? Is that part of your function?
Yes. When you talk about the grid, it's, I guess,
wow,
it's
the grid is the grid, right?
The grid, yeah, it's a ubiquitous term. Right. We're a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interconnected, and there are control rooms and things that manage that. Our previous caller mentioned MISO. That's the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator. What MISO does, which ITC is a member, they are an RTO, a regional transmission organization, and they manage all of those entities. They manage congestion between grids and between owners, and they run markets and all that kind of stuff. We're part of the MISO grid, and we're also part of another grid called the Southwest Power Pool, which is headquartered out of Little Rock, Arkansas, and that's where our Kansas operations are.
Wow, pretty far flung. I know you guys have been in acquisition mode lately. Are you still? Are you looking for more acquisitions? I know you're not the CEO. We went over that, but
not the CEO or the CFO, and I will leave those questions to them.
Okay, good. Well, let's throw some questions here at your partner, Joe Randazzo, the Director of Networks Information Security. One of the reasons we're doing this show is Cybersecurity Week, or actually month. And the people are questioning at some point. We're all expecting a cyber 9/11, and I've debated this with many cybersecurity experts, and many of them think it's going to be attacking the electrical grid because that brings down everything, right? So, what do we do to keep that from happening?
Well, definitely, critical infrastructure in general is a very appealing target these days for various. Miscreants and threat actors out there. But we're doing numerous things to protect those kind of things from happening, stemming from protecting our network with next-generation techniques, intrusion prevention techniques, advanced persistent threat blocking techniques, advanced monitoring and situational awareness, also down to, you know, what do we do if something like that was to happen? If we were under attack, where we invoke things like a CSIRT, which is our cybersecurity incident response team, which is a team of dedicated individuals from all parts of the company, from operations to communications to the network guys to the cybersecurity guys, who all come together to solve. A problem, and also our business continuity planning, where we have second, thirds, and fourth locations to go to, and alternate communication mediums from satellite and other technologies.
And you said you had two data centers, right?
We do. We have a data center in Ann Arbor, and we also have a data center in Novi. We also have, obviously, some presence in our other areas, Cedar Rapids and Iowa as well.
Is it something where I know your power distribution versus data distribution. I know with data it's not always a good idea to have all your centers in one region. Is that something you look at maybe? Do you need more data centers outside of the upper Great Lakes?
Well, we certainly have. Like I said, we're capable of operating our grid from multiple locations, and we are geographically diverse. We have locations in the Midwest outside of Michigan as well. So these plans take into consideration a lot of situations that could occur, and we have multiple means of continuing to operate our critical infrastructure in the event that something, one of these cyber 9/11 type things would happen.
Yeah, you hear a lot about how, you know, maybe the grid is rickety, that kind of thing. There's some criticism of sort
trees
of the
landing on the wires.
It makes the whole Midwest go down. Talk a little bit about, you know, how you're investing in grid reliability, if you could, Ron.
Okay. It's funny you mentioned trees. When the blackout occurred back in 2003, that started with a tree falling, to simplify it.
And that one fell in the forest, and somebody certainly heard it. Yes,
right. It fell in the forest in Ohio and caused all the issues. Since that time, there have been a lot of new regulations around grid stability, and ironically, tree trimming was one of them. There were new guidelines that came out, and they constantly get updated. Also came out of that were new critical infrastructure protection standards, which we call SIP, another TLA, three-letter acronym in our industry. So we have to adhere to those SIP standards, and they're all designed around reliability.
Right now, we're focused on terrorists or nation states coming after you guys. But what about the weather, Mother Nature? What happens when a bad tornado comes through, or gosh, one of those hurricanes somehow meanders up here? What do you do then?
We have emergency responses to those kind of things. We had a significant ice storm in Minnesota a couple years ago that took out a large portion of our lines. We set up emergency response teams and site teams that are in place to get service back online as quickly as possible. We mobilize very quickly in those instances.
And if I recall, I see a lot of electrical companies, they share, right? When
yes.
somebody goes down, you could have a whole bunch coming up from the south or something to bail you out, and then vice versa?
Yes, there's actually a program around that the utilities participate in, and we're a member of that.
Oh, great, great. Have you had any incidents where you've had to really rip your hair out, as it were? Maybe not in your case, Ron, but...
If you could see me, you know it's too late for that.
But, I mean, something that you didn't really plan for that happened, and you had to really scramble.
Well, actually, no. It's amazing how, it might look like, a duck on top, but, you don't know all the paddling's going underneath. But we haven't had any significant issues. You know, like anybody, you'll get something you look at that'll kind of raise your eyebrows, but we dig into that. If we do ever have an incident, we have to report that to the Department of Energy, and fortunately, we haven't had to do that.
Well, good, good. Mm. And then what sort of attacks are you experiencing, Joe Randazzo? Jan Ness talked about what they're getting hit with all the time. What do you guys get hit with?
So Jan was mentioning that he's dealing with some slow denial of service type attacks, and we see those kind of attacks, too, on our perimeters far outside of our infrastructure. We also have been seeing a lot more spear phishing and phishing type techniques. A lot of these, and they're really nasty, some of these viruses and Trojans that are meant to hit the SCADA systems. Things like Black Energy and Havocs and some of these other type of attacks that are out there. All of them seem to be proliferating these days through some kind of spear phishing technique. For example, Havocs was really targeting senior management and trying to get in through that. But because we're so vigilant and cybersecurity aware in the company, I mean, everybody is hearing a message time after time again. Most of our execs, they're well aware to move past
that. And they will not open an attachment if they don't recognize it, right? So, yeah.
Ryan?
We test for that. We do social engineering where we test for those kind of things, and then if somebody fails the test, we'll let them know about it.
Is it a lot of educationals?
Yes.
I mean, because you get a lot of employees, and sometimes you just open an attachment and afterwards you go, why did I do that?
Yeah, cybersecurity, there are several ways, several different avenues you have to go to protect yourself, and culture is a big one. You have to have your organization culture in place to know when things are happening, and have to educate, and it's a constant thing, and we do it constantly.
Well, yeah, because I've been personally getting something that purports to be from Federal Express about how they couldn't deliver something to my house, and there's an attachment on it that's supposedly the receipt, and I notice right. It's a zip file. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to open that. I'm going to double, triple, and fourple kill it much as I can.
I had an email from American Express telling me they needed some information on my card, and I don't have an American Express card.
Oh, yeah, that's a dead giveaway.
Yeah, that is.
And the thing is, we're looking to look at some of the next generation ways of combating these things, because we they only have to be right once. We have to be right all the time.
Every time. Yeah.
So effectively, we're looking at ways of extracting that threat before it even enters. So you wouldn't even see that FedEx email. You wouldn't even be able to open the attachment. It would already have threat extraction. So it would already be emulated into a different file. So there's a lot of new things out there, and we're partnering with different research centers and other entities to not just look at cybersecurity commercially, but also to look at advanced techniques that are out there in the market as well.
Hey, one of the things I know that insider attacks is probably one of the biggest ones. How do you deal with those?
Well, fortunately, we haven't had one yet.
Oh, well, good. But, I mean, you must have a plan in place, right?
Maybe Joe can talk a little more about this, but we do have some rules in place for who can access what, and we have two-factor authentication. So, you have to be you'd have to go through some great lengths to get into systems you're not supposed to be into.
And then if you are, then Joe springs to action, right, and gets his SWAT team in there and gets it all gets you out of there, right?
I'll find him.
Okay. Don't you can run, but you can't hide. All right, like it. We got about a minute left, Matt.
All right. Just a real quick question about what's next for the grid here. I mean, are we going to see more wind power? Are we going to see more solar? Are we going to see more renewables? And, you know, what does that mean for the grid? I know you just recently completed a big project in the Thumb, right?
Right. Yeah, the idea behind the Thumb, it's a multi-value project, meaning that it will bring in power from anything, you know, whatever source it is. That's what's the nice thing about ITC is we're energy agnostic. So whatever type of generation source is out there, we will hook it up.
All right. Okay. Well, I think we've just about reached the end of the show for today.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, yeah. Episode number 4 is down, but there will be more, I think. I want to thank my partner in crime, Mike Brennan. I want to thank our guests, Meredith Bronk, CEO of OST in Grand Rapids, Linda Deshet, Executive Director of the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan, Jan Ness, CEO of Online Tech, Ron Hinesley, CIO, and Joe Randazzo, ITC's security guy, Director of Network and Information Security. And once again, we will see you next Monday, right, Mike?
Absolutely. It's hopefully we'll have fewer technical issues and the podcast retort will be running, right, Jessica?
Okay.
That's what I'm hoping for too.
We forgot to thank our ace engineer.
Geez, my bad. Okay, thanks, Jess. I know with the ITC guys here, the power will be on next Monday, right?
Absolutely.
We won't have to worry about that.
No,
okay, good.
No problem there. Okay, well, we got to go. It's been fun. This is Mike Brennan.
And Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. M Squared TechCast is an affiliate of the Podcast Detroit Network. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode. This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.